show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. It is the end of January, we'll call it. We probably won't get another show out in the month of January, or if we will, it'll be right at the end. But we're very excited today because we're going to be joined by Rob Nyer. And when I say we, of course, I mean myself, Troy Olson, Michael Engel of kingsofkaufman.com, and Jeff Herr of Echo Sports. That's EKOH, or I guess it's echonetwork.com. If I ever get the website right, we'll be doing great. Anyways, Rob Nyer is coming on here in just a couple of minutes, and so we're kind of rushing through an open here. But we wanted to kind of set this up for you. Not a lot going on in baseball right now.
Not
for the Royals. I mean, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you're very interested in baseball today because we're recording this not long after Justin Upton finally got his way and poo-pooed around enough that he got traded to be on the same team with his brother. So as somebody said on
hold
today,
on. Now, I don't know that that's necessarily fair. Just because he decided to waive the no-trade clause, that's what gives him the leverage. I mean, they've tried to trade him for three straight years. I think he's got a significant grievance against that team that if he doesn't want to be there and wants to kind of force him a little bit, I think he's justified in this case.
Not to mention, they're saddled with a manager right now who has a manager and a GM, apparently, who love the idea of this indefinable grit that players must have in order to play for the organization, which I saw Kevin Scobie tweeted it out earlier. He said if GMs can ever quantify grit, then I'll stop thinking they're full of shit. I thought that was perfect.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome if they could do that. Maybe we can send him Chris Getz.
Well, and you know, he would fit perfect. I mean, Willie Boom Boom Bloomquist ended up there, but I should say oh, yeah. World Baseball Classic playing Willie Boom Boom Bloomquist is a Diamondback, and
yeah.
I know if I go to very many Diamondback games after I get moved down there, that's the jersey I'm going to have. I'm going to have me a Bloomquist jersey.
Really?
That's about all that's playing for them anymore.
Hey, they got Didi Gregarious.
It's going to be a rough go for them. I mean, the Rockies are a better team than the Diamondbacks probably. The Dodgers are a heck of a lot better, and the Giants are 2 years removed from a World Series and have a very similar team to what they had going through there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting for them. But I don't know. There's something more to it down there. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. But he had said early on that really the only place he wanted to play was with his brother, and magically the only trade that works out is the one that sends him to Atlanta. So, you know, I'm standing by what I say that he kind of poo-pooed around and got his way. But somebody did say on Twitter that now they can have all that time to spend together while they're hurt together in rehab. So both players having a little bit of trouble staying on the field. But
not a lot. BJ more than Justin.
It's
fine. I mean,
and Atlanta did have the guns to trade for him at least. I mean, they've got a pretty stacked system down there. So
yeah, they gave up Randall Delgado's awesome pitching prospect. So wasn't cheap. Martin Prado, he's a damn good player.
Yeah, I was gonna say Prado was a nice get.
I've heard some people say that Delgado might actually be the better long term pitcher than Teheran. So
yeah, I heard that too.
For whatever that's worth.
Yeah, that's some high praise. So I wouldn't mind having a Delgado, or you know, I'd settle for Teheran.
And yeah, and to think the Braves had both of them.
Yeah.
From the Royals side of things, we have seen tweets from Arizona. I know Billy Butler's already down there. Jason Adam lives down there, so he's always down there. I believe Lane Adam is down there. Not sure who all else.
Does Billy Butler have a house down there, too? I feel like I heard that, maybe.
Probably. I mean, everybody just kind of got done with the caravan, so I think that's their next stop is to get down there and get back to Arizona and kind of just do their thing. And then there's all the guys who are going to be in the World Baseball Classic, so they're probably getting close to getting down there, like, you know, Kelvin Herrera and Sal Perez. And I think Bruce Chen was officially named Team China, I believe. I've written about this, so I should know this, but, you know.
I'm actually surprised that the Royals allowed Salvador Perez to play. Cause
I know.
I know he's a tough dude, but after last year, like, the last thing I want to do is put him in a position where he could get injured again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I color me surprised that they allowed that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, at least, I mean, they're carrying three catchers on Team Venezuela. So he's probably not going to be playing every day. He might actually end up playing less than he would have in spring training games, but man, I don't know. Anytime you have reps that your guy's taken that isn't with your team.
Exactly.
Like, makes me a little iffy.
I think on that note, there should be plenty of spring training talk coming up here starting after the next show, because pitchers and catchers will start to report in February and we can take it from there. Yeah. But
every Wednesday at 4, it's time for the ball game.
Shake those sheets. Get on your feet.
No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Oh, my goodness. Another assist for Alex Gordon.
Bubba Starling.
You know, I grew up a Royals fan. Just a pretty special time, you know.
Join baseball's best Wednesdays from 4 to 5 on
The Ball Game on ESPN 1510 AM.
For nearly 2 years, the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault have brought you the fans' perspective on Royals baseball. You've joined us for nearly 2 years at kingsofkaufman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Come celebrate at Kelly's Westport Inn on February 23rd, 2013, as we celebrate 2 great years of guests, Royals talk, and analysis with you, our fans. Party starts at 7, free cover before 10. See you there.
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
Take me out.
Hey, ball gamers. February 10th, come join us for a special event to kick off the spring season in style. Come out to Screenland Armor in North Kansas City for a private viewing of the 1989 classic, Major League.
How would you like to manage the Indians this year?
I don't know.
We'll have drink specials, a full menu, and even hot dogs and Cracker Jacks. Tickets are only $5, and you can get all the info you need at our website, www.theballgamekc.com.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
So come on out to the Screenland Armor for Major League with the Ball Game, Sunday, February 10th. It would be very, very bad to miss this one.
He's very bad.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Of course, I'm Troy, joined by Mike and Jeff. And now on the phone, I believe it's from Oregon, just back from the Walla Walla, Washington area, according to his Twitter feed the last couple of days, Rob Nyer. Rob, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
If you don't know who Rob Nyer is, you don't read much online about the Royals. I really think that pretty well covers it. Or baseball, yeah, that's more exact. Rob actually spent some time in Kansas City, grew up here, moved here around 1976, I believe, which put you here just in time for the good Royals teams, and then to live through the last 20-plus, almost 30 years of crap that they've put out there for us as well. Rob, kind of take us through how you became a Royals fan and what it's been like for you seeing the good teams and now the bad too.
Well, first of all, thanks a lot for having me. It's I never ever get tired of talking about the Royals, and especially my early time as a Royals fan, because it really was a formative experience for me. I know that a lot of people listening, probably almost everybody listening, is a big Royals fan and can relate to my experience to some degree. But, you know, I don't believe that I would have the life that I have if it weren't for the Royals. We moved to Kansas City when I was, Raymore, Missouri, actually, a suburb down south, when I was about to turn 10, as you said, 1976. And I had been a sports fan, had been a big sports fan before that. I've been a big sports fan for as long as I can remember. But for whatever reason, I never really had a favorite baseball team before that. We lived in about 2 hours from Chicago, maybe, and 3 hours from Detroit, and I didn't really care much about either any of the teams in those cities. But we moved to Kansas City, and you couldn't help but become infected with Royals fever. I mean, they'd been competitive in 75, but had finished, I believe, second behind the A's. And in 76, I don't remember what kind of start they got off to. I just remember that almost from day one of arriving in the area, I was following the Royals day in, day out. My father's company had season tickets. In fact, his company was a subsidiary of Marion Laboratories, which was owned by Ewing Kauffman, so they were pretty good season tickets. And I got to go to in my mind, I've always remembered it being 7 games that first season we were there. I'd never seen a major league game, so that was quite a thrill for me. And I just, you know, from day one, I was obsessed with Royals, and that would go on for years and years.
Now, Rob wrote for ESPN.com when it was just the .com. He never did anything on screen for ESPN, I don't believe, but was with ESPN.com from the early days of that, rode that through for a long, long time, over 15 years, I believe, and then he moved on to SB Nation. Was one of the first people, I believe, of any sort of name that was signed to SB Nation's website, so that's kind of a big deal for Rob as well. And then, of course, he's continued a lot of Kansas City things. He was here for the BP event for the All-Star Game, and it was great to meet Rob at that event as well. As we said, Rob grew up a bit of a Royals fan. Now, Rob, something that was said on the radio here in Kansas City on the afternoon show by Jay Binkley, who's a friend of our show, he's a big football fan, and he believes that there's three seasons in Kansas City, and they go in this order of popularity: Chiefs football, Chiefs offseason, and Royals baseball. And then it's kind of college basketball after that for those that are big KU or Mizzou or K-State fans, whatever, you know, those that kind of blends in there too. When you came here in the late 70s, was it like that, or was it all Royals all the time, or was there still that huge Chiefs following that we see here today?
I don't remember the Chiefs having a big following at all. I'm not saying that it wasn't there. It's possible that I just missed it. But in the mid to late 70s, the Chiefs were one of the worst teams in the NFL year in, year out, and I think the fans responded to that. And I don't know that there isn't room in Kansas City for two incredibly successful and popular clubs. It just hasn't come up yet. You know, the Chiefs were very good in the late 60s and early 70s, and the Royals weren't. The Royals were very good in the late 70s and early 80s. The Chiefs weren't. By the time the Chiefs got really good again, the Royals were, you know, they were semi-competitive, and then, of course, just got worse as the Chiefs got better and had that nice run for a while. So I don't know what would happen if both teams were really good, but the history of Kansas City sports is that they will embrace either team if they're successful.
Go ahead, guys.
Well, one of the things that they've done this offseason to kind of stop the losing and stop all these losing seasons and win the fans back is, you know, they revamped their starting rotation, which has obviously been a weakness the last few years. When they made the trade to send Will Myers to Tampa, right at the time, your instant reaction was that it was the worst trade in Major League Baseball history. Now, is that still your opinion of it, or is it just a bad trade at this point?
Well, I think that I wrote that as a joke. In fact, I know that I did. It's not likely to wind up anything like the worst trade in Major League history. I'm not even sure if it'll be the worst trade in Royals history. It probably won't be. I mean,
probably not.
as I think I mentioned that day later, it's really hard to beat Ed Hearn, David Cone for Ed Hearn.
Yep.
Because Ed Hearn contributed basically zero, whereas Jay Shields is going to be a good pitcher for the Royals for a couple of years. So, no, I don't think it's the worst trade in history or in Royals history. It probably won't even be the worst trade made this winter. It's possible, but I think it's unlikely. My basic point, though, is that, you know, if a lot of things work out for the Royals this season, a lot of things, more than we should expect, they'll win around 85 games. And I don't think it's worth trading your best prospect for a good chance or a decent chance at an 85-win season. A 95-win season, I can see that. I think that has ancillary benefits that can justify trading a top prospect, but not for 85 wins.
So, Rob, I'm kind of the three of us, I'm kind of the biggest Chiefs fan of the group, and right now, the Chiefs, this isn't a Chiefs question, it's just a lead-in, but so right now the Chiefs obviously do not have a quarterback, and they have the number one pick in the draft, and the big debate right now is should the Chiefs draft a quarterback or not, number one overall, based on who's available and everything, and, you know, I kind of have that idea of, you know, if not now, then when? So I think the question then is from your perspective, when you look at the Royals pre-trade and they still had Will Myers, now I was not an advocate for the trade at all, but just to play devil's advocate here, you know, if not now, then when? Like when, because the Royals have failed to develop pitcher after pitcher over the years, especially recently. So, I mean, were you the kind in the camp that says, you know, see if they get 80 wins this year with Will Myers and then make the trade, or when? How would you have tried to handle that situation if you were the Royals GM for a day?
You know, it's a tricky thing because you want results now. But I hearken back to when the Royals signed Gilmesh a few years ago for a lot of money, and I had a long argument with Randy Cesarelli on, I think it was back then I was still writing on my website, robnyer.com, regularly about the Royals. And his point was, look, they have the money to spend. They might as well spend it on somebody who's a pretty good pitcher. And you can make the same argument to some degree now. I mean, this time they're spending money and they had to spend a prospect. But you could say, you know, if not now, when will they do it? What should they spend it on? My argument then and my argument now is that, again, it's just not worth making that investment if you don't have a good chance of getting to the postseason if you make it. And I don't think that this is that moment. I would probably wait until, yeah, you know, the young players have had a little longer to develop. It isn't like you have a short window. I mean, people like to say, well, gosh, they only have this window in which they can compete. I mean, most of their best players, their position players, are signed for a number of years. They're under team control because they're so young. It's likely that almost all of those players, the good young ones, with the exception of Alex Gordon, each one of those players, it's more likely they'll be better in 2014 and 15 than in 2013. I think you let the young players develop for another year. You try to develop some of your own young pitching. Hasn't happened yet. Maybe it will. I mean, basically, the Royals are trying to win 90 games this year with essentially a starting pitching staff, as I believe, that's completely non-homegrown. And that can work, but it's very difficult. It's difficult to grow your own pitchers, too. I mean, that's the most difficult thing about winning on a budget is finding starting pitching. And that is, you know, if you want to look at the way you should try to do it, you look at the Rays, and they're just loaded. They've been loaded for years with homegrown pitchers, and that's really obviously where the Royals have completely fallen off, is they've developed good hitters, but they cannot come up with a single good starting pitcher in their system.
Well, and I think going along those lines, my fear with this trade, when I heard that it was originally Shields for Myers, I was like, okay, well, you know, we kind of saw that coming. And then it was Shields and Davis for Myers. I was going, oh, this is looking really good. And then they said, and more. And my heart just sunk because I started thinking of who the and more was going to be. I thought, you know, Mike Montgomery was a high person that I could see going there. And that was fine because Monty's not worked out here. Let him go somewhere that he's probably going to work because, like you said, they develop pitchers. But I was expecting Jason Adam, who's a very, very good friend of the program, to go because he's a Tampa Bay style pitcher. But he didn't. thankfully for those of us that are fans of his, but then it comes out that it's Jake Odorizzi, and that's the one that crushed me with this deal, and I actually did say that it was the worst trade in Royals history, forgetting about Cone and Hearn, and then adjusted back to the second worst trade and have come off of that even a little bit more. But I'm still doubtful in this trade, but hopeful, I guess, is what I could say. But in your opinion, how big of an addition is Monty and Montgomery and Odorizzi to this trade, more so even than I mean, it hurts to lose Myers, but how much bigger of a loss is it when you figure up the whole package in there?
Well, it does make a difference, and the attrition rate on young pitchers is so high that there's a pretty good chance that neither Montgomery nor Odorizzi will ever be a good major league pitcher. In fact, there's a good chance that neither one of them will ever even win 10 or 12 games in a season, even be average. But if you know that and you're trying to win on a budget, what you almost have to do is stockpile talented young pitchers, and if you're lucky, maybe half of them will pan out. You know, look at, you know, the Rays have been exceptionally fortunate and good, and most of their pitching prospects have panned out over the last 4 or 5 years. Not all of them, but most of them. The A's have stockpiled a dozen talented young pitchers over the last few years, and roughly speaking, half of them have wound up being good. And that's almost what you have to do. Find 8 or 10 of those guys, both through the draft and canny trades, and maybe you can cobble together 3/5 of a rotation out of those guys. I mean, that's always been the model, I thought, was, well, we'll develop 2 or 3 of our own, and then when they're ready to win, then we go out and sign some free agents or make some trades for some veterans. The Royals have sort of turned that on its head. They've given up on young pitching, and they're just going with veterans because maybe they felt like they had to. But I would have been perfectly content to give Odorizzi a job this year, let him go through those growing pains, hope he stays healthy, and then you hope that in 2014 or 15, Jake Odorizzi is as good as James Shields. That's entirely possible. Is it likely? No. That's why you want 6 or 7 of those guys, but it's possible.
Now, Rob, you mentioned a couple things that always get me riled up on this show when you talk about the Rays and how they develop pitching and how the Royals just haven't been able to. And I've been one of the guys around, you know, whether it's on Twitter, on this show or whatever, just kind of beating the drum about the Royals' just failures in development. And I'm curious, what do you know and what's your perspective on the Royals and their ability to, or I should say lack of ability to develop pitchers? Is it a thing where you said the Rays were just been incredibly fortunate? Have the Royals just been incredibly unfortunate? Or are they maybe doing something along the way that, you know, stacks the deck against them that maybe they could change and be better at?
Well, that is one of the great mysteries of baseball. Very few people know the real answer. I think a few people inside baseball do. I can't say that I know the answer. I do believe that the Royals, and this goes back for many years now, have been exceptionally unfortunate. I mean, you would just by luck, a few guys should have developed. I mean, Jose Rosado, you know, and Zach Greinke are the only two guys in the last, 15 years or something that have really developed and been good major league starters. I think that they've had enough talent in the system where there should be more than just those two. But I also think that, and I think, too, that the Rays have been fortunate, no question. I mean, these are two teams at extreme ends of pitcher development, and any extremes are going to involve some luck. But having said that, I think the Rays, and probably some other teams too, but the Rays maybe more than anybody, have perhaps unlocked the secret to keep to developing pitchers. I think that they draft pitchers who are more likely to stay healthy, which is more than half the battle for a young pitcher. I mean, these teams don't draft pitchers who can't throw hard and don't have impressive bodies and aren't smart. Most of the guys that get drafted in the upper rounds, they have all those things. what distinguishes them is the ability to stay healthy. Now, whether that's something that can be diagnosed before the draft or is something that the teams figure, the Rays figure out after the draft and they put these guys on programs, I don't know. But that's what distinguishes the Rays from every other team in baseball over the last 5 years, is not only that they have developed great young starting pitching, but they're able to keep these guys healthy. They almost, you know, Tommy John surgery is almost unknown in the Rays organization. Mm. You know, and then you have teams like the Blue Jays who had three or four just last year. So that's a secret. And I hate to hold that against the Royals because nobody else is doing what the Rays are doing either. But that's what you have to do. If you have no money to spend on starting pitching, you've got to figure out a way to develop your own.
Well, I think we've, you know, on this show especially, we've beat this trade to death, and I think it's good to get a bit of a local fan. I mean, Rob is a fan of the Royals as well as a national qualified writer, and so I think it's good to get the national perspective on the trade, but coming from somebody that is quote-unquote one of us, you know, a Kansas City person, and we'll get back to the whole one of us thing here in a little bit, but this is something that might actually get you even more riled up than bad Royals moves is you're an advanced stat guy. Mike and Jeff are advanced stat guys, and I'm you know, the old school fan. I do it with the eye test. I don't understand advanced stats nearly as well as I should. I'm the first to admit that. When we started this show almost 2 years ago, it was one of the big things that drew me to the combination of Mike and I was that we were so different in that aspect, and it worked really well for us and has. And there are some people out there on both sides of this issue that just take it to an extreme and can't see it both ways. Now, you're not one of those by any means, but you're definitely an advanced stat guy. And there's guys like Mitch Albom, and I don't remember who you mentioned on Twitter a couple weeks back that had you all riled up because they had taken a shot on advanced stat guys. And I know when the James Shields trade happened, I don't know why he chose you guys, but Bob Fesco had made a remark on his show that the only guys that don't like the trade are the guys that feed on the Royals being bad and live out of their mother's basements, guys like Rainey and Rob Nyer. And I was like, why did he choose Rob Nyer? I understood Rainey on that because Rainey's on 810 and all that, but I couldn't believe that he would go after you on that shot because you write more than just the Royals. But when it comes to this whole advanced stat, you know, old school, regular fan argument, I mean, I guess I'm asking this question really poorly, but how does it get so out of hand, I guess, would be the question.
Well, you know, I just had a conversation with a very well-known national baseball writer a week or so ago on this very subject, and it really depends on where you sit. From where I sit, most of the venom tends to come from guys like Mitch Albom and people with national audiences who, you know, for whatever reason, I think part of the reason that they do it is because we're an easy target. It's easy to make fun of the guy who you know, blogs in his mom's basement. You know, to whatever degree that's even true, and for the most part it isn't, it's sort of irrelevant. It's an ad hominem attack. Mm-hmm. And really, I think it should be beneath most sports writers. Now, if you're a columnist, you have a certain amount of leeway stylistically. You're, to some degree, you're paid to lob grenades like that. It's always been that way. But I think it gets out of hand. But I can tell you that from the other side, they see the bloggers as being intemperate and insulting and condescending. Now, from my perspective, and I sort of come at it from both ends, because I was that blogger. You know, I was thinking he started out with a few readers when I started at ESPN.com, the low man on the totem pole. And, you know, things have changed in the last 15 or 20 years, and I've got a bigger audience than I once had and have published books and whatnot, but I've been in both places. And to me, it's not really equal. I mean, when you have somebody like John Heyman on the MLB network lobbing a grenade at bloggers and anyone who doesn't believe Jack Moore should be in the Hall of Fame, I don't think that's the same. I don't think it's equivalent to, you know, some guy on a website or some guy in the comments section somewhere saying John Heyman's an idiot. I don't think that's correct behavior. It doesn't foster communication or education, but I don't think they're equivalent. I think that people who have a national audience have a greater responsibility to be civil, and to be educated and to be temperate. And I don't see it happening. Some of those guys in the national media, and I'm one of those guys, but we have tendency to just jump on any intemperate comment we see on the internet and say, look, see, they're irresponsible. How dare they? Well, I don't see it that way. I think you let those slide. I think that if you're John Heyman, you treat somebody in making a comment in a blog somewhere the same as you would somebody who wrote a letter to the editor in the newspaper or left a message on your answering machine at the newspaper or something. So I don't think it's equivalent. You know, I think it's a false equivalence. I think that the national writers and people on TV have a long way to go when it comes to being more accepting of other viewpoints.
Now, when we're talking about this split between traditional media and blogs, that takes me to something that you wrote when you made the jump from ESPN to SB Nation. There's a line in your introduction where you say, where the good writing comes from, though, is irrelevant. All that matters is the writing. And to me, like running a blog and doing this for 3 years now, I'm biased because I do think that there are a lot of very good writers out there who don't have the same national platform. And it's almost dismissive a lot of times when that happens. And to me, it comes down to things like just getting access sometimes to players, sometimes getting into the press box. Do you run into any kind of differences like that as a part of SB Nation now as opposed to ESPN, or have you run into that because your platform was generally online rather than the old school media?
My access got better and better the longer I was at ESPN, and there's there's definitely a certain cachet to having ESPN associated with your name,
right?
And I could call most clubs, not all of them, but most teams, and just say I work for ESPN, even ESPN.com, and I'd like to talk to whomever. And generally, that worked out. When it didn't, it was usually because the GM or whoever I wanted to talk to knew who I was and didn't like me. And that happened a few times, but that's fine. As far as whether that's changed, it really hasn't. I was at ESPN long enough where a lot of people who work for the teams still remember who I was or am. And I haven't really had any access problems in the 2 years that I've been with SB Nation. The one issue that I have had is that I was, after a number of years at ESPN.com, allowed to join the Baseball Writers Association of America, which for many years had prohibited anybody from online entities. Mm-hmm. And then they finally let me in about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, let a few of us in. And just this last, just a couple months ago, I lost my membership because the BBWA refused to accredit SB Nation. And I think it was largely because they see SB Nation, and justifiably, as largely a network of blogs and not a generator of national content. Or, I think the real issue is they felt like or feel like accrediting SB Nation would open the door to all of SB Nation's bloggers looking to get credentials, which they see as competition. So now I'm out of the BBWA again, which is fine. I can still go to the press, but I just have to ask for credentials instead of just showing my card when I get to the ballpark.
And on that note, I like that you mentioned that kind of that accreditation process, because that's something that, from my side, I've been at a couple of blogging events that the Royals have held, and that was one of the questions that we asked was, our blogger, is there ever going to be a program where bloggers get, regular access if you can vet them properly? And that was the answer that they gave us, was that if we give it to this guy, it's going to, you know, all the others are going to have to go in too. I don't necessarily agree with, but, you know, I do see that point. But it does bring up that kind of us versus them that you referred to, as far as the traditional versus this newer media. What other challenges do you find from being part of SB Nation rather than, you know, the traditional machine that's always been there?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it should go without saying that my audience size is not what it was at ESPN, mm-hmm. and which is, you know, it's no fun to have a smaller audience. On the other hand, I have a lot more freedom to do different things.
Right.
Not that I didn't have freedom at ESPN, but I have even more freedom at SB Nation in terms of language and my ability to create content and guide our coverage, our baseball coverage. So, you know, for everything that I've lost at SB Nation, I've gained something or more than won something. And by the way, I do want to mention that, you know, the Royals' argument about bloggers and access is, frankly, pretty ridiculous.
Right.
They make that distinction every day when people want access. Yes, the only thing that the Royals have to do, they have to allow anybody with a BBWAA card into the press box every single game. You show up at the ballpark, you show your card, and you're in. Otherwise, anybody, whether you work for a small town newspaper or the Kansas City Star or anyone else, you've got to call and get a credential. And they have the ability to turn down anybody. You know, if it's Lenexa Gazette, they'll probably say, sure, come on over. Even though the Lenexa Gazette has a much smaller audience than half a dozen Royals-related blogs. So it's really, they have complete control over that. And in part, they haven't allowed access to bloggers because they still haven't gotten used to the idea of it. And in part, it's because they don't want to piss off the local baseball writers who already have access and don't want to be worried about having to jostle around in the press box. But some teams have been very welcoming toward bloggers. You know, nobody lets all the bloggers in, but there are other teams that have different policies. So it's entirely up to the Royals. They can do whatever they want. And they, like most teams, have chosen to be overly restrictive.
And Rob, you kind of mentioned there one of the reasons, because they don't want to do it because they have to let everybody else do it that has a blog. But then another reason being not want to anger any of the local sports writers that are already credentialed. So I'm wondering, in your experience, and especially probably even more relevant when you first started writing for ESPN.com and first started coming up, is the idea of the writers, the quote-unquote writers, being afraid of the quote-unquote bloggers as from a standpoint of they might be stealing our jobs and they're hurting the newspaper industry? Is that something that kind of factors into what you said? And then on top of that, is that something that in your career that maybe you've encountered a lot of difficulties from that arena of people that are your standard kind of newspaper writer that might be look down upon bloggers, not necessarily from a talent standpoint, but of a fear standpoint of, well, you know, I've got to try and, you know, make them less important so that they don't take my job.
I'm sure that happens. I've never noticed it personally. I tend to be pretty oblivious when it comes to things like that. I just sort of assume that everybody's a good guy and doesn't really care about me. And I think that's usually the case. Most people are too wrapped up, and not just—I mean, everybody, not just baseball writers, are wrapped up in whatever they're doing at the moment to worry about what the next guy over is doing. Has anyone ever been hostile toward me in the press box? Sure, not overtly necessarily, but just clearly making a point to not say hello or look me in the eye. That's fine. I earlier in my career, especially, I had a tendency to take what other writers were doing and essentially make fun of them and say they didn't know what they were talking about. And, you know, I wrote some things when I was younger that I probably wouldn't write now. And I really don't blame, those writers specifically who I insulted, for holding it against me. And I wouldn't, you know, and some of their friends have held it against me as well. But for the most part, the writers that I've spoken to, that I've taken the time to walk up to and say hello and introduce myself, have been very kind to me. So I really don't have any complaints. I do think that in a general way, there is some hostility among the newspaper writers toward bloggers. They do see bloggers to some degree taking their audience away and endangering their jobs, which is obviously a very scary thing. They also can imagine a time when, look, one of the only things, most of the baseball writers are not particularly good writers. They're reporters.
Mm-hmm.
They're good at that. That's what distinguishes them from you or I in many cases. Well, if they lose that, if they lose their fairly exclusive access to the players, then what do they have? I'm sure they can imagine a time when, let's say the Royals decide to credential four blogs, and every night three or four bloggers are showing up, and maybe those guys have the courage, and a lot of bloggers don't. I often don't, but but there'll be bloggers who will be perfectly happy to go down into the locker room after the game and talk to the players. And every moment that a blogger is asking a question or talking to a player is a moment that the newspaper guy can't do that same thing. So they have a number of reasons to be, if not hostile, less than enthusiastic about having bloggers in the press box and in the clubhouse.
Well, I will say this just to wrap up that topic. It's interesting how, you know, they do fear us a little bit, us being bloggers. They do have a little bit of fear, the team, the Royals at least, and some of the long-standing news folks definitely have a fear over bloggers and the impact we can make. But it's interesting because, you know, they've had these Blog to the K events and stuff, and they vet us through that. So they know the kind of person you are. You've been out there. They know who you are. They've got your background check and all that. And then we're good enough to help them with Major League Baseball All-Star stuff. They were sending all the time to people that had went to Blog to the K, hey, this is going to be happening. You know, would you like to report on this? And then they did throw us a bone and let some people go out to a pre-day on the Fan Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I couldn't get off work, but I know Chris did, and I think Mike, you went too, didn't you? Or did you and Jeff both go?
I went. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and they had a chance to interview Brett, and it was great for the show, and it's great for us. And you know, they'll throw us a bone once in a while, but definitely, there's definitely enough vetting that's went on to throw a little more of a bone. Even if it was only once a series, you could have like one blogger at each game or something, and you know, versus what you were saying with three or four, it would sure be nice, and it would help them. It would get more eyes on the team, more perception, but maybe that's not what they want either. Anyways, we're talking to Rob Nyer from SB Nation. Rob has been extremely gracious with our time. I'm sorry, with his time to join us today. And I do want to thank Rob for that. And I got to geek out for a minute. I wasn't going to do this, and because we're supposed to be, we always try to be a professional show and what have you. But I'm going to admit this.
It never works.
Rob, we've been doing this show for almost 2 years, and we're going to celebrate our second anniversary later next month at Kelly's Westport Inn, which is our sponsor, which is crazy to think of in and of itself. This show has a sponsor that makes it break even. But when we sat down to do this show, we quickly realized that we weren't going to have access to the players. So, you know, outside of players, who did we want to get? And Rob Nyer's been on that list for a long, long time. And so we're glad that we can finally that we can cross that off the list, or maybe put it on the who do we need a second time list. And so thank you very, very much for helping us knock out one of our long time ones for this show.
Oh, I'm happy to do it, guys, anytime.
So, but like I said, Rob Nyer, SB Nation, please go read his stuff. He's got several books out. Check him out. I'm sure you can get them on Amazon or robnyer.com, I believe, still has links to all that kind of stuff. So definitely go check it out. One last question for you, Rob, and then we'll let you go. But being that you've spent some time in Kansas City, what is your favorite barbecue?
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely the wrong guy to ask that question because I rarely eat meat. I do enjoy going to Arthur Bryant's when I'm in town just for the atmosphere and the history of the thing.
You know what? That works, though. And I knew you didn't eat a lot of meat, so I was really interested with where this question was going to go. So, but I felt I had to ask it in case people didn't realize that, then it was out there. But anyways, thank you very much, Rob, and we're going to let you get on with your day and have a great weekend, and thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a good night. Well, that was Rob Meyer. What do you think of that, guys?
That was Rob Meyer.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'm not going to lie. We're pretty excited about that one. I remember we've been chasing that unicorn for a little bit of time, and we've pinged him on Twitter a few different times and never been able to get him. And then for whatever reason, he was in a talking mood one day, and I got him, and Mike saw the post go up, and I had an email in my box before I could even send one to anybody else, or I think you pinged me on Gmail or something. You went, well, that was easy.
You know, yeah.
It's this long, and we've got more of that coming. I got to confirm it, but I feel pretty strong about that we're going to have a short interview with Jay Jaffe next week, which is actually, we originally were going to have him on about 2 weeks ago, and for whatever reason, we never got it done. But I'm kind of glad we waited, because he wrote the article on the Royals and gave their offseason a D+.
He was not a fan of the offseason.
And I know Mike's not a fan, but I encourage everybody, including you, Mike, to go out and find the podcast from Bob Fesco's show when Jay Jaffe was on. I want to say Tuesday, I believe it was, he was on. He got everybody, well, I shouldn't say that. He got a lot of people in this town really riled up, because even people that didn't like the trade were mad about what he had to say, because it was one of those, how dare this guy in Brooklyn say these things. So we'll bring Jay on and maybe we can get some people riled up too with some of Jay's comments on his blog. So we're going to try to have him on next week. Still efforting to get Danny Duffy on. He's been very busy, obviously, at the Caravan and what have you. I'm hoping, since pitchers and catchers report, even though he's still hurt, I believe he's going to be in Arizona the next couple of weeks. So I'm hoping that maybe we can get him on then. And we can keep rocking into the regular season. We got a lot of people lined up for you guys. We got a lot of neat stuff, some non-baseball stuff that we're going to bring on just to mix it up a little bit. I know we will as our baseball comes out with their next edition. We'll have some people on around that.
And we've got not even just with guests and whatnot. We've got the movie on February 10th.
Yep.
At the Armor Screenland. With Major League. That's going to be very cool. $5. I mean, what the heck?
If you go to the box office, and this is in one of the commercials you'll hear today as well, but if you go to the box office you go to the box office and you say that you're with either the Kansas City Baseball Vault or the Ball Game, which is Chris Kamler's show, you can get it for $4. So if you're downtown, right there where the AMC used to be, that's what it is. It used to be the AMC right there in the Power and Light District on the corner. God, I wish I was right on this. I think it's, I want to say 13th and Main, but that might be wrong. So
that's right.
But it's right down there. And it was a beautiful place to go to a show before, so I can only imagine what it's like now that Screenland's got a piece of it.
No. Wait, hold on. Sorry, I was only – that's the Draft House. Screenland is north of the river.
Oh, it's at the Screenland. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was at the Draft House.
Yeah. Off Arthur Road.
Wrong place.
Sorry.
I'm sure you can see a good movie there. Just don't do it on February 10th.
Yeah, you might want to go to Screenland to buy your tickets, not the Draft House. I totally have thought it's been the Draft House all along.
We'll edit that out.
Yeah.
This is why they have posts, right?
Yeah, right. Well, it doesn't matter. People know that we're human and we make mistakes. But
he's listening anyway.
Yeah, right. A little Major League preview there for you. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. We're going to talk some Royals and then probably talk about some other stuff too. God only knows. I don't have a list from here on out, so it's going to be off the top, which we know is always fun. So we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
For nearly 2 years, the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault have brought you the fans' perspective on Royals baseball. You've joined us for nearly 2 years at kingsofkauffman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Come celebrate at Kelly's Westport Inn on February 23rd, 2013, as we celebrate 2 great years of guests, Royals talk, and analysis with you, our fans. Party starts at 7, free cover before 10. See you there. I love that commercial because it's a lot better than the ones I did when we first started doing this. Of course, Chris has done most of our commercials, and he's really, really good, but we don't have all that technology anymore. And I like that one because I even had to put a little bit of like a legal notice on the end there. You know, you got to be in by 10, otherwise you get that $5 charge, and I don't care how many times you tell them that you're here for my party and that you know me, they're going to charge you $3. So but no cover before 10.
We don't own the place.
And if you could get there by 9, that's even better. But I'm going to try to ask them that night to not start charging till 10 sharp, and we'll see if we can get away with that. And usually they're – I mean, the Kellys are great, folks. I've obviously, they sponsor the show, so I love them. But even more so, I needed a place for a reception. I didn't want to pay $1,500 to $3,000 to do so. And so I just, on a whim, after checking with my fiancé to see if she'd be willing to do it, messaged – Kelly's and Mitch Kelly specifically and said, hey, you know, could we do our reception in your place? What would it cost? And they're not, we're going to have a cash bar that night for my reception, and they're not charging us anything. They're closing their bar down for me to have my reception for 4 hours. So they're really good Kansas City people. So if you're all about supporting the local business and what have you, you don't get more local than what's right there.
You really don't.
It's the oldest building in Kansas City, and it's like the second or third oldest bar, and it's been in the Kelly's family for a long, long time. So help them, you know, support them because they really are Kansas City. Back to baseball. I think we've talked a lot about the trade, really not much there. We got pitchers and catchers reporting next week. That'll be exciting. We talked a little bit about the movie coming up, and Kamler has a show with the guys from the Kansas City Baseball Vault, including former, 1985 World Series champion Greg Pryor and then our friend Jeff Logan. They're out at an event tonight at Kauffman that has George Brett at it. And I guess it's,
no big
it's
deal.
Quite the event, according to Kamler. He's had some comments on it, but it looks like they're having some trouble with sound over there. So that's unfortunate, but they have a lot of really cool things. Usually at the flea market, but apparently Brett's not a fan, so they had it at the K tonight. So, what else is going on, guys?
There's not much. I mean, there's not much for the Royals. They're pretty much done. You know, they signed Luke Hochaver to kind of settle before arbitration. You know, nothing surprising. I mean, once they tendered a contract to him, he was going to get paid, regardless of if you think $4.5 million for his season is too much or not. He was going to get paid. I don't know. I mean, a lot of it right now is just kind of waiting for spring training to start because they're over budget. I don't think they're going to make any other trades. There's not a lot of free agents out there left. Sean Markham just came to an agreement with the Mets today. So, you know, there's another guy that I really wanted them to sign, and he's only going to be on a one-year deal. So I think that might be a missed opportunity. But other than that, the only guys out there are like Kyle Loesch and Michael Bourne, and the Royals aren't going to be able to afford either one of them. So,
you couldn't have set that up better. There's a piece out on Pine Tar Press by our good friend Clint Scholes. He, I can't really say he wrote an article. He wrote a snippet based off of a Bob Dutton tweet because God love that Bob has really gotten into Twitter. Somebody had said to him, hey, what's more likely? The Royals signing Loesch or Bourne, they're both still out there. And he retweets it and puts on the front of it, Dutton retweets it and says, Brett'll come back first, or something along those lines.
More likely Brett comes out of retirement.
Yeah, something along those lines. But Clint did a little piece, just a snippet, and kind of poked fun at the whole thing. And it's very funny. So it takes literally 30 seconds to read. So go check that out. Just search Clint Scholes and George Brett, and it'll probably come right up.
I was going to ask Rob Nyer if he knew if Jeff Francoeur was going to be the right fielder for the Royals.
I almost did too, but I didn't know he'd get the joke, and so.
Man, you know, kind of makes you not envy Robert Ford and Bob Dutton for that, because it's like every single day.
And it's always those two guys. Like, it's nobody else. They don't ask it of the other pundits in town. It's those two guys.
Well, how it works is people bug Robert Ford first, and then he tries to send them to Mellinger, And Sam Mellinger somehow skates away from all this. Nobody bugs him. And he tells him to go bug Dutton, and then Dutton just kind of stops, and you can almost see his eyes rolling, you know, head in his hands, sighing, questioning his life's path to this point, where all these people 15 times a day are asking him about Jeffrey Gore.
One of the things, well, I think Mellinger is very talented at doing that, and I think there's two things that I've noticed. One is he has his Twitter Tuesday, so he can always use that as an excuse where he just doesn't respond and then says he handles it on Twitter Tuesday. And the next thing I've noticed is Mellinger, unlike nearly anybody I've seen, is incredibly good at diffusing a question. Like, when you listen to him on the radio, he's kind of got this weird calming effect. Whenever you, like,
he does
these kind of hot button issues of, oh, what do you think about this? And it's just like he really kind of diffuses it. There's no like antagonism or anything that, I'm always impressed by it, and I always come away thinking like, man, that was an incredibly reasoned and sensible approach. I wish I was like that. And then anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that I'm absolutely not. So
yeah, no, your 8:30 a.m. rant, it's like clockwork.
Yeah, people are. Lance Otto has already predicted it today before it even came. So. It's getting predictable, and people start to see it coming.
Well, here's a great Dutton tweet from January 18th, and Clint Scholes asked him, any chance a meteor hits Frenchie prior to the season? Bob Dutton retweets it, or me?
Oh, Bob. Somebody should just DM Bob so we can get him on the show.
We need
so
to get him on the show.
Ask him about the right field issues right here on the show.
All right, let's find someone who can do that.
Yeah, and let's do that.
But on a back to baseball note, something I was thinking about for the Royals offseason. To me, I look at a lot of this and I think at the Royals, where the Royals are now, as opposed to like 3 months ago, heading into 2013, like how much of this season is really going to, and I'm not talking about playoffs or how much winning games, just like how much is, more specifically, Dayton Moore, I should say, how much is his just livelihood, job security, everything going to be based more so on Irvin Santana than James Shields? Because like you got to look at it from this standpoint of Irvin Santana is getting paid $12 million this year. So what did Markham sign for, Mike?
I haven't seen financial figure, but a 1 year deal, I mean, it couldn't be more than $5 million at this stage in the game.
I mean, think about, you've got guys out there and even someone like Kyle Loesch, you know, and guys who you could probably sign for that $10 to $12 million range, whether it's a 1 year contract or more, you know, you could do that. And the Royals right now are over their quote unquote budget. You know, as laughable as that is, but they are. And $12 million of that, which, what are they at, like 83, 84-ish million?
Around there, yeah.
Tender. So, I mean, that's like, you know, Santana is about 15% of that budget right there. So, I mean, I think there's, and the question is now, you know, if they made that trade for James Shield right at the start, do they make a trade for Irvin Santana? You know, do they wait and say, we've got James Shield, we've got Wade Davis, let's try and figure something else out, see if we can sign a Sean Markham or maybe get a Kyle Loesch or something out there. So I really think if they go out and James Shields does what he does, and I have no reason to believe that he won't, even if he's not quite as good as he was the last year or two, you know, I think he's still going to be pretty good for the Royals. But Irvin Santana, I think, is really going to be the one that people need to look at, because even when that was made, even though I was a fan of it, there were still those people out there that were saying, man, Dayton Moore jumped the gun again, and he read it incorrectly. And I've given him credit on this past show for not having that be less of a problem this year of misreading the market than he did a year, you know, in prior years, especially with kind of waiting out the trade a little bit and the Guthrie signing. But yeah, the Irvin Santana thing, I mean, I look at that and I think that's what I need to judge Dayton Moore on, because that then becomes the iffiest move if the Royals don't do well next season.
Yeah, and he's coming off a year where he gave up 39 homers, and, you know, it could be a really bad year for Santana. He could be good. I mean, his 2010 and 2011 were really good seasons, but, you know, the more recent one was the bad one, so...
And if they weren't hiding behind the money thing, the Santana deal's great. I mean, they traded nothing to get him. I mean, let's
yeah.
be real.
Yeah.
I can't believe right. that people online actually found a problem with that trade outside of that it was a lot of money. And now that they're hiding behind that, it looks awful. But real quick, and then I'll go back to you, Jeff, but Kyle Loesch, I believe, also costs a draft pick
yeah.
if anybody signed him. So that's been part of the problem with getting him.
So it was a supplemental because he got that the qualifying offer.
That's a good point. You know, it's just, I mean, yeah, Santana is coming off a pretty bad season. But, you know, when all these James Shield rumors really started in earnest, it was like 2 years ago before the 2011 season, when James Shield was coming off a season that was just about as bad as Ervin Santana's last year.
Yep.
So, you know, you never know. I mean, who knows? But I
don't know.
Yeah, especially at this point. But I think, you know, our buddy Clint Scholes and David Leske, I think they've both, I've seen them harp on it more than others that bring up a note that I think still kind of flown under the radar. You know, beyond Ervin Santana and James Shield, the most important part of this whole thing working is Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Aziz Escobar, so all these young guys that we keep hearing so much promise for. Everyone's taking them as a given right now, and they're not, especially someone like Eric Hosmer.
Well, yeah.
So that's
the Royals were...
to the Royals' success, then I don't know if I should say more important, but you know, collectively, those things happening will be more important than someone like Ervin Santana having a bounce-back year.
Yeah, it's not like there's this one hole, and now it's – the Royals were 12th in the AL in runs scored last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got to come up with something now. Some of that, you know, they missed half the season of Sal Perez, and Hosmer struggled all year, and Moustakas was – hurt or slumping the second half, and Frank Cor regressed, and Lorenzo Cain got hurt, and you know, all these different things. But you know, you don't have the same excuses this year. They've all got to go out there and, you know, put the bat on the ball and score some runs, because if they don't, if they're only scoring 4 runs a game, well, you know, odds are they're still not going to be a winning team, just because it's baseball and it's the American League.
Not to mention, you know, there's just so many unknowns too. I mean, Salvador Perez, as good as he's been the last 2 seasons in his limited time, if you add it all up, it's still not an entire season. Mm-hmm. So as good as he's been and as exciting as he is as a player, you know, I don't know how much evidence we have to say that he can do it for an entire season. I believe that he can. Lots of people say that he can. He still hasn't shown it, just like Hosmer and Moustakas haven't either. So... I mean, what are the odds that Aziz Escobar repeats what he did last year? And same with Billy Butler and Alex Gordon. I mean, Butler and Gordon, the odds are better that they repeat. But everybody else, I mean, there's just so many unknowns on this team outside of the pitching.
I guess I need to look up the stats, which I don't have in front of me, and I'm not going to call up right now. But I didn't feel like that Moustakas had that bad of a season. But everybody talks that he... like that he did. And I mean, obviously Hosmer had a horrible season, and we've talked about that in depth, but Mike's typing away. He'll have the stats here in just a second.
I already got him. No, and Troy, you're absolutely right. He did not have that bad of a season.
Overall. Yeah. But when you look at the splits of his first, you know,
the splits are the big deal.
His April and May were awesome. I mean, they were great, but after that, They really tailed off. He had a 817 OPS in the first half in 79 games, and his last 70 games of the year, 586 OPS. 15 homers versus 5 in that split.
But, you know, he's a 35-40 home run guy, if you ask Ned Yost, so...
Shoot, I could hit 25 if I got in front of Ned Yost, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yep, well, that kid's tall. He's got some grit.
Yeah.
Get some leverage on that swing. There it is.
Swing for them fences. Just make sure you pull that ball. Don't be hitting it off the side of the field.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of unknowns on this team. It's I think you're, the way you said it was pretty much perfect, Mike. It's not as though they needed that one pitcher, and I think that's what Rob Nyer kind of alluded to bring this full circle on the show here. It wasn't that just one guy away to turn them into a 90-95 win team. You know, there's still a couple things that need to get figured out before they get to that point. So, I mean,
something entirely unrelated to anything that we're talking about, but I did want to throw this out there as well as one of our quick hits tonight. The MLB fan cave's coming up. A lot of people thought I should do it, but typically engaged married people aren't really what they're looking for the fan cave, because they sweep you away to New York for 6 months and put you in a house with a bunch of other typically single people. So it wasn't really a good fit for me at the moves that I was about to make in my life, which I knew at the time I was going to probably more than likely move and definitely get engaged within the next year, which I, of course, did. But there is one of my Twitter followers that is trying to make a push. She's a Blue Jays fan, but I really think that Royals Nation should get behind this gal, especially the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault group. Her Twitter is AllieCat17, just like it sounds. A-L-L-E-Y-C-A-T and the number 17. Her name's April Witzman. She's got a video out on YouTube. It's, you know, it doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles to it. It's a fun little video that she did on her own, and go vote for it. You can look up her Twitter handle and then find it from there. But go vote for her, because I would love to see this girl get a shot. She is, with some of the boneheads they had in the man cave last year, I think she'd be a great fit and somebody that would be very good for that. So that's just my plea to our listener nation is go give her a shot, because she deserves it. What else we got, guys?
I've been listening to that Thrift Shop song a lot.
I can talk some Chiefs if you want.
Ben McLemore's really good at the basketball.
Ben McLemore is very good at basketball, and KU does not know how to win a game by more than 5.
As long as they win, I don't care.
You know, I had this discussion with somebody on Twitter the other day. He was saying, he's like, the KU has just been horrible lately. And I was like, that's a little strong, isn't it? And
their offense has been horrible.
He's like, no, they've been horrible. And I was like, I mean, at the time, this is before the K-State game, or during the K-State game. So, man, they're 16-1, and they're 4-0 in the conference, number three team in the country. I don't know that I'd call them horrible at all. And
I don't think they're horrible, but I don't think they're a solid number three. I think number three is a bit of a reach for KU right now. And, I mean, yes, they just took out the number 11 team in the country and their quote-unquote rival in K-State. So, and they did it at K-State. And there's a lot to be said for winning a top 15 game on the road against a rival. I mean, there is a lot of things that are very positive there. And so the Jayhawks did what they had to do. But you just look back at those games against Texas and Iowa State especially, and you just go, where's the real team? When's the real Jayhawks going to stand up? Because if this is the team you guys are putting out there, then you're not getting out of the second round of the tournament. The reason is you're going to underestimate those teams you're playing in those early
rounds. I don't
think
so, because it's conference play, and conference play is always more difficult than non-conference play. You've got, you know, continuity between what the coaches have seen, their style, you've seen their players before, and all of that. It's always a lot tighter in the conference play than in December, where KU's playing American and winning by 45, you know.
Right,
but then you've also got you've got a situation where this year, like, conventionally, are they maybe soft for a number three overall in the country? Maybe, but you look at this year, the college landscape of college basketball. I mean, Duke, number one team in the country, just got clowned by Miami, who's ranked 25th. Yeah, but just got destroyed by Miami, and KU goes on the road to a top 11 team and wins. So, I mean, and you look at last year during KU's tournament run, you know, all the way to the national championship game, I wouldn't say they played well in any one of those games.
No.
I mean, would they trail Ohio State by 16 points or something at one point? Mm-hmm. I mean, no doubt they definitely could get bounced in the second round, but I mean, you say that every year. I mean, KU was clowning people by 40 points a game in 2010, and they got bounced by a Northern Iowa team. So it
yep. Their team with they start four seniors and they've got a potential player of the year as their other starter. And I'm going to take that. I'll take my chances. Maybe they go out in the second round, but I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah,
I'm biased too. So
time I'd have to live with that disappointment.
Well, I'll say this, and we didn't mean to get on a KU subject, but it happened. But I will say this: look out for K-State because I think they're going to come into Lawrence with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder this year, and I don't think they're good enough to win. I don't think they're good enough to win at Lawrence. But, you know, they wanted that game at Brambridge, and they couldn't come away with it. So Allen Fieldhouse is looking.
It's the same script every year. I mean, we won 43 of 46 or so. So.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing. What happened when they
but
were.
They are good.
There was, yeah, I mean, well, there was the year when they made the Elite Eight, and KU was, they were both ranked in the top five, and they played that one year. KU wins by, yeah, I think it was. Almost nearly the same score, 4 or 5 points, at Bramlage, and then goes to Lawrence, and they just destroy them. So I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, but my KU bias is coming out too much. We gotta
switch
the topic here.
This is clearly not a fair argument here.
No.
And for all those that think I'm a KU homer, give me some credit for this because
that's true.
You know, I'm not, but I do love Bill Self, and if I ever get a chance to have him on this show, your damn Skippy will have him on this show because I think I've met him in person. I think he's just a quality man. I think he gives a good interview, and he's the only person that they let be on the air that says more than me. So I'm all about talking to him because it makes me feel better about myself.
And I do want to say we touched on this is unrelated, but we touched on my Twitter rants earlier. Well, since we're talking about non-baseball stuff, I do, anybody who listens to this show and follows me for baseball tweets, just stick with me. I know I've been tweeting a lot about Chiefs draft and football and probably blowing up people's timeline, but baseball will get here soon enough. So I apologize if anybody's annoyed by my Chiefs tweets, but it's, you know, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for.
Long, cold winter.
Yes, and if I can just avoid gun control and abortion and any other political issue and anything Manti Te'o at this point, I watched the Katie special today, which is very funny, by the way. If you get a chance to watch the special, go watch it, because at one part when they play the voicemails, they put up in the text, because they got the text running next to the voicemail, so you can understand, I guess, exactly what she says. She's clear as can be. But there's one part where it says, like, indiscernible text. Noise or something like that, like they can't make it out. The line that is behind there is able to be made out, and it's "or rolling a fatty." So I'm sure that was, they should have thought twice about playing that voicemail, because you know there's an NFL scout somewhere going, test him. So
well.
I'm over that subject
too.
If he's not behind it, he's really gullible, and in my opinion, if I'm a GM for a football team, I question his mental capability to play on my football team.
What else is he going to get roped into?
Exactly. What other kind of? I mean, it's Jamarcus Russell all over again. The guy was the same kind of way. He got scammed and conned by bad people, and I could see the whole thing happening again. So I think we've covered college football. Pro football slightly, college basketball, and we talked to Rod Meyer. So I think I want to be done.
Pretty good day.
All day's work for the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Yep. Join us, as you heard in the commercial, you can join us February 23rd, all night long, starting at 7 o'clock. Come out, join us at Kelly's, and we're going to have a great time. And we're going to celebrate 2 years of doing this. 2 years, Mike, that we've been doing this. And Jeff, his first episode was episode 9, and then I think he became a regular cast member within the first, 40 episodes probably?
Yeah, it was like a month or two after that. I was kind of in and out for a while there.
Yeah, so you've been with us for over a year now, and it's been a good run. I'm really proud of what we put out here. And sometimes we're goofy like this for 15 minutes, but, you know, sometimes we have Rob Nyer on. So there you go. And on that note, I am Troy Olson for Michael Engel and Jeff Hurd. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Join us, you know, get in before 10 so you don't have to pay the cover. Before 9 is even better. Come out on February 10th to the Screenland Armor up north. If you go up to the box office, it's only $4. Mention this show or the ball game. It's $5 if you buy it online, I believe. Like I said, February 23rd at Kelly's. Be there. Second anniversary until next week. We got great guests coming all preseason and season long. But until then, have a great week and go Royals. That was odd. That show just kind of went a different way altogether.
Yeah.